In fact, the universe was quite dark until it lit up a billion years after the bang. So what turned the lights on? Dr. Stuart Wyeth at the University of Melbourne won the Malcolm McIntosh Prize finding this out.
After the Big Bang, the universe was rapidly expanding, hot, very hot place, and had no structure, no stars or galaxies. And as it expanded, it cooled. And when it cooled to below about 10,000 degrees, the electrons and the protons that were initially separate combined. And when that happened, the universe became transparent. And so light was able to travel freely to us. We see that as the cosmic microwave background radiation. And that radiation tells us about the conditions in the universe, very small fluctuations in density. Those fluctuations grew under gravity, and they formed the sites where gas could conglomerate into stars. And at that time, around 500 million years after the Big Bang, they lit up the universe for the first time.
Obviously, there weren't any observers from afar looking at the universe, but one imagines a Big Bang being a fiery ball. Wasn't it like that?
It was a fiery ball, and if you had have lived in the universe within the first 300,000 years, what you would be looking at is a very bright, with light that was at too high frequencies to see, but just before it, the electrons and the protons recombined, you would have seen something with a light that's similar to what we see from the sun.
And this wonderful image you've got of the universe when those stars were forming, and that particular point, was it after about a billion years when all the lights went on?
After about a billion years, there's a crucial event that ended at that time called reionization. We're not sure exactly when it ended, but it's a time when stars in the universe had produced one photon or one packet of light for every atom in the universe. And so that's a crucial time because galaxies came to dominate the conditions in the universe then, and they've dominated the conditions in the 12 billion years since that
time. I know
time.
You don't necessarily think of it like this, but I do. It's almost a romantic thing, you know, all the lights in a palace going on. Suddenly, there we are, we're in business.
It's a bit like that because if you think of how long the universe has been in existence, about 13.5 billion years, and then you consider that there were no galaxies for the first 500 million years, but by 1 billion years later, so that's a small fraction of time, only 6% or so of the age, you've gone from nothing to galaxies dominating the conditions in the universe and with light being able to travel freely from one galaxy to another. And so the lights, in terms of time in seconds, they did switch on very quickly.
How do you study this?
I study this theoretically. We're in a position now where over the last decade and a half, we've had the bedding down of a precision cosmology. So we know how structure formed and when it formed and how many structures of different sizes there are. And that gives us a very good framework in which we can try and predict the properties of the first galaxies. We have very little observational information about them at the moment, but that'll change in the next decade with the James Webb Space Telescope, with the Giant Magellan Telescope, which will be able to see galaxies which are further away and therefore at times when the universe was younger. And we'll also be able to look at the effect that those galaxies had on the hydrogen in the remaining universe, because that hydrogen, before it gets ionized by the starlight, before it's have its proton electron broken apart again, that hydrogen gas emits radio wavelength photons, and we can observe those with new generation of radio telescopes culminating in the Square Kilometre Array.
Sure, you mentioned the James Webb. It's a gigantic telescope going up with any luck. Is it about 2018? But it keeps being delayed.
I think it's a challenging thing to put a large telescope in space, and that's a telescope unlike Hubble, which won't be serviceable by shuttles or servicing missions, so it'll have to go out and it'll have to work by itself with no intervention. That's clearly a very challenging engineering program. When you look at the history of all of the satellite programs in astronomy, they all suffer from long delays. And the James Webb is the one currently under construction, so its delays are more visible to us right now.
And the other one you mentioned, Magellan?
The Giant Magellan Telescope. So this is a telescope in which Australia has invested a 10% share. It's a telescope that have an effective diameter of about 25 metres. This is an order of magnitude increase in the sensitivity for studying very faint objects compared to the 10-metre telescopes that we can currently use to look at the faintest objects that we know about today.
Now, I know you said you're a theoretician. Is there any slight chance you might be wrong, and when they go up there and they look and they measure, that whoops?
Well, what I hope that the theories will have done is to direct the observations, and what we hope is that we'll have learned something from first principles, but that we'll have guided the observations to look at the right parts of parameter space, and those observations will refine the theory, and we clearly won't have gotten everything right, and there'll be something completely unexpected.
But congratulations.
Thanks very much, Robin.
Stuart Wyeth is Professor of Astrophysics at the University of Melbourne and now winner of the Malcolm McIntosh Prize for Physical Sciences.